Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd's Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
At the school was the hot shot of their school, and it was quite the wake-up call. When I get Turn Davis down, I got him down two strikes. I threw him two breaking or little kind of cutters that kind of broke in on him. Swing and a miss. So I figure, you know what, I can't hit the fastball, might as well bring it again. I throw him another fastball. This one, though, breaks away from him, runs right into the sweet spot of his bat, and I'll tell you what, that ball still hasn't landed. Went right into the trees of old Tiger Field down there at Savannah State University, and he trotted around those bases, and I'll tell you what, I never looked at a catcher the same way again. They had my number, especially because they're the ones catching my pitches. You got to think about it. Every day of the week, I'm throwing a bullpen to these guys. They see how my slider breaks, how my fastball breaks, the changeup that, you know, changeup wasn't the best, but they kind of knew how all my pitches worked and how everything went along, and they took advantage of it.
Well, this guy wasn't a baseball player, but he was a hell of a tennis player, and he's still an instructor, and he's down in Fort Myers, and he's a entrepreneur. He's a mover and a shaker, and he is King Pickle, Billy McGee. What's up, brother?
Hey, Mike. Good afternoon to you. Everything's good and hot down here.
Well, last week it was really hot as you took your traveling road show, Billy McGee's Wide World of Pickleball, to Nashville, Tennessee. We had, obviously, down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, we had a wonderful 9/11 event that you put together, and I was blessed to participate in. And now you're taking this concept, and you're going to do it all over the country. And I applaud you for that, because it's for all the right reasons. So let's talk about what just took place in Nashville, and then we'll talk about the incredible growth of the game of pickleball.
You know, it's interesting, because, Mike, you were there when we tested, so to speak, the event, special event on 9/11. And we begin to realize that we could do these pickleball special events all over the country, especially on what I call historic or memorable days, i.e. the 9/11, paying tribute to the fallen from that day, 4th of July, which we just did in Nashville, paying tribute to our country's independence. We'll be doing the 9/11 event again in St. Peter, Tampa, coming up in September. We're going to do Veterans Day pickleball event. And all of these events are kind of three-tiered. They're designed to help promote the sport, especially in areas that are just starting to see the growth or are in the process of trying to get their cities to build pickleball courts. It's to commemorate and celebrate specific days in history. And it's also to help specific charities that we like working with. Right now we're working with the Wounded Blue, which is the 50,000 or more wounded police officers in the country, and also this particular one in Nashville happened to include the Mid-South Liver Alliance, which is a 5-state liver educational platform. And I think that really makes these special events fun for everyone, because anyone can play in them. They're not tournaments. Anyone can come out and watch. Everyone's making a small donation to the charities, and it helps us promote the growth of the sport of pickleball. And Mike, as you know, I'm promoting the sport as maybe one of the greatest health and wellness and socialization sports movements in maybe 5 decades, going back to when we saw tennis and racquetball exploding back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Well, you were a pioneer, being a tennis player, to embrace this sport. You just saw the opportunities and the health and wellness aspect of it, because you and I discussed it yesterday or the day before, the difficulty of actually playing tennis, and this opportunity minimizes that. Or even a schlub like me, or people with limited mobility, can get out and participate, and I think that's the beauty of this sport.
It is. And you know, Mike, I've been in tennis. I was blessed to have a father who was one of the top players in the 30s. He played with Bobby Riggs. He played the U.S. Open, then the national championships at Forest Hills. He played all over the world, and he taught me and my sisters the game. I was fortunate to be a really good junior, played at LSU, and then went on the tour for quite a few years. But I've been around the game, and, you know, when I recognized a little bit of the pushback that was coming, you know, 5 years ago from the tennis population, I understand that. But what you also have to understand is anything that gets people out and gets them active, whether they're young, they're old, it's a sport. And if it's a sport that's adding the socialization aspect, the ability to get out there and learn the sport and play in a day or two, and the cost of getting into that sport is so minimal, then I think it's a great thing. Because think about it, for the last, 2 years, we've been housebound, trapped. Our mental health is not good. Our physical health is not good. And here's a sport that you can put six of the pickleball courts on every two elderly tennis courts that are not being used. And that means you've got 24 people out there playing in a space that really only eight tennis players could play in. So as the population ages for tennis, I can see a lot of those players switching over, because in fact, chasing a tennis ball on a, you know, 80-foot court, 36 feet wide or 27 feet wide, is not an easy thing to do when you're late 60s, 70s. But on a pickleball court, you can be active, exercising, and socializing in a very small space, which makes it, in my opinion, a great thing for this country and for the planet. And more importantly, you know, I think at the height of tennis, we probably had, my God, may remember 70, 75 million players. This sport, this health and wellness sport, could surpass that.
Well, and you had alluded to the fact that they're also looking to put it into the middle schools and with the kids, again, because of the low entry expense for the school systems, and I think that's a hell of an idea.
Well, it's interesting because this fall, we will, through my pickleball company, we will be working with universities across the Southeast to have pickleball clubs and to have their former alumni, like I at LSU, will donate to retrofit some older courts so that the pickleball clubs at the universities will be playing. I know that a young man that I coach tennis to here in Fort Myers, who's now at the University of Florida, has already gotten the athletic department to approve an athletic varsity status for their pickleball club. And they, in fact, were playing up at South Carolina about 6 weeks ago in a tournament, college tournament, that was Florida, Georgia, Auburn, South Carolina, I believe Alabama came. So you see it beginning to have some proliferation in the college campuses, which will lead to a lot of club pickleball in the colleges. We down here, I'm working right now with three different high schools to implement a pickleball program in their high schools. And in our junior tennis programs at the Racquet Club, we already have the little 4- and 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds out on the pickleball court learning the eye-hand coordination with the little paddles and the colorful courts and the little plastic balls, which is a good segue into a larger racket and a tennis ball. So I only see benefit to that. And obviously the parents of these little children are going, well, heck, we could play this too. So it's just a multiplication of crazy. For everybody entering pickleball, that one person is going to want to play doubles. They're not going to want to play singles. They're going to want to play doubles. So they're going to try and get three more people to play. So if one is astronomically right now, about 5 million people are playing in the country, according to the governing body, the USA Pickleball Association. And I could see that easily by the end of our decade being in the upwards of 50 to 60 million.
You're listening to Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. We are live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. And I want to introduce you, Bill, to Ben Botham. He's my wingman now. He's my number one draft pick into the world of broadcasting. Just graduated from Savannah State. And he's got a couple questions. And someday he'll pry the mic out of the old man's hands and send me down out to the beach and take over this baby. But not quite yet.
Hopefully not too soon. So, yeah, I just want. So I've been noticing recently on ESPN and a couple of the other sports channels, they talk or they actually broadcast games of cornhole and other kind of, you know, backyard kind of sports. But I've seen that pickleball is now the official state sport of Washington. Do you see like pickleball being broadcasted on ESPN and other stations like that?
Sure, and Ben, welcome to the show. Absolutely. You're already seeing it on the Tennis Channel. We know that the social media power of streaming, as Mike will tell you, what we did last September 11th, we streamed live on our own pickleball channel, and that drew in a little over 230,000 people from 41 states and 19 countries. So you'll begin to see the proliferation of that type of broadcasting. I know that, as you're saying, cornhole and other sports are broadcast on ESPN, but I go back to a time, and Mike knows this, where I got into promoting the sport of arena football back in the late 80s, early 90s. Helped start the Orlando Predators, and then, as people know, in Tampa, I moved over and worked with Bob Grease to build the Tampa Bay Storm into a monster. You know, ESPN finally picked up arena football, and then obviously I got Fox Sports South to get involved, and then, as you know, if you follow the sport, when Kurt Warner and Jay Gruden and all the guys really raised the bar, all of a sudden you started seeing us on NBC because the NFL was coming in. What's happening in pickleball is you're beginning to see owners like Tom Dodson, who is one of the majority owners of the Carolina Hurricanes of the NHL, has just bought the PPA Tour, the Professional Pickleball Association Tour. He's signing a lot of the top players like Ben Johns, Tyson McGuffin, and others that are playing on the tour. You see management companies like IMG that are eyeballing this platform. So to answer your question, absolutely. I think you'll see the U.S. Open down here in Naples was aired on, I believe, NBC. You'll see a lot of the networks begin to pick it up because the big money is starting and the big brands are starting to move into the sport.
All right. Well, I know you didn't want to talk a little. We just have to talk a little bit of tennis on this Wimbledon weekend. And you obviously, at one point, what you ranked it about 400 in the world on the world tennis ratings. And that's nothing to sneeze at, my friend. And then you
it wasn't good enough for me to get into Wimbledon or the U.S. Open, but it was good enough for me to roam around, make a living, and
have some fun
watching Wimbledon. Yep. You know, Mike, watching Wimbledon. It's interesting because we've watched the sport over the last 20 years being dominated by Serena, Venus, Djokovic, the Joker, Nadal, and Federer. But you're beginning to see with Serena stepping aside, you're beginning to see the cracks in the men's side where the new players, even though Djokovic is going to be really hard to take out tomorrow with Kyrgios, but if you look at the evolution of the sport, in my generation, a little bit before the Australians dominated the game in the 50s and 60s with Laver and Newcomb, Staley and Rosewall, the Harry Hopman, great coach, had brought these men into the game and they dominated. The United States then, as the game was then a serve and volley game, began to bring its artillery with the big players of Stan Smith and Arthur Ashe. All of a sudden, you see a new generation with Jimmy Connors coming and John McEnroe and Andre Agassi and Jim Courier and Pete Sampras. all big serve volleyers. Then Federer broke through serving and volleying. And then in the late 90s, all of a sudden the game began to retreat to the backcourt. And you saw a new generation that Djokovic and Nadal and Federer and I'm blanking the young man from Great Britain, Murray, began to dominate. When you look at Wimbledon and the men's side in the last 80 Wimbledons, if I'm correct, I think the three big boys have won 72 of them. I mean, that's mind-boggling that they dominate the game. But now, as Federer is getting a little older and injured, and Nadal of withdrawing and injured, you see the kids like Kyrgios and other players beginning to creep into that space. The other thing that I think you're going to see is you're going to see players coming back to the net like Creasy. The game, I think, will transition back to a serve and volley or a serve, ground stroke, and volley, but they're going to bring the game back to the forecourt. So if you're watching Wimbledon today and tomorrow, you see enormous wear on the grass in the backcourt. You're going to see a lot of that vertical grass wear in the coming years up into the forecourt. Today's final with the ladies, I think Rybakina won the match over Jabbar, but both of those ladies come from countries that are, I don't even think people realize that they were playing tennis. So,
what, Kyrgyzstan, or I think it was the name of one of them.
You know, that's in Central Asia, and Jabbar plays out of North Africa and Tunisia. I mean,
damn,
tennis is everywhere. Yeah, tennis is everywhere. And, you know, let's compare tennis to pickleball. I tell people in pickleball all the time, please don't compare pickleball to tennis. Pickleball is pickleball. Tennis is tennis. And tennis is a very, 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 very difficult sport to become even adequate at. The joy of pickleball is that you can get out there and learn to be pretty good at it. I'm not taking anything away from the athletes that are playing it, but it makes it available for everybody to play the sport in a pretty easy way. Tennis is not that. So when you're watching the best players in the world at Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, Australian, or French, I mean, if you haven't seen them in person and you get a chance to go see them, because you just cannot believe how good. And you said it. I played the tour on and off for 4 years, and I was pretty good. I mean, these players are just unbelievable.
Well, you're still pretty good in your own mind there, Billy.
Well, you know, the people ask you, they go, Billy, you know, they see the pictures on the wall and they go, look at the shorts you guys wore. I go, hey, guys, why don't you pay attention to the racket and the ball? Let's not talk about them Liberty shorts that we all wore. But I think it was really our era with Jimmy Connors and Nastasi and McEnroe that really brought the masses to the game of tennis. Because remember, the game is tennis as it is at Wimbledon, the gentlemen's and ladies' championships. You know, we grew up in a time where you wore all white, and it was like it is at Wimbledon still. But people were very, very, very conscious that this was a gentleman's sport, women's sport. And, you know, the bad boys like Nastasi and Tyriac and McEnroe, they broke that barrier down. And even though the USTA is shorted up and the ITF is shorted up. And
Jimmy Connors. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, Connors, and unless you were watching in that era, I mean, we all had, you know, just crazy personalities. We would yell at the people, yell at players, yell at the stands, yell at spectators. And I think Kyrgios is a little bit like that. And I think people are enjoying a little bit of this craziness, because the numbers that are watching him play are climbing. And, this young man has easily has potential to be number one if he decides that's what he wants to do. I think he's getting the feeling of what it's like to be. Like, tomorrow will be his first major final, and I expect him to do pretty well.
Well, you know, on the women's side, as you said, and I'm watching it today, and, you know, hardly know where the countries were and the names. So I do think that the women's game is going to have some challenges of keeping the attention, because there isn't a personality as there has been with you know, the Serena sisters, and prior to that, Chrissy Everett, and some of these women that had personalities and outside of the game of tennis. And I don't see that taking place with these girls.
No, and you know, Mike, it's interesting because after I finished playing, I coached for a while, and it was interesting because we had the McEnroe Borg, we had the McEnroe Connors, we had the Connors Borg era, and Americans loved to watch Americans, Chris Everett, Martina Navratilova. We love watching our players, and since Pete Sampras, we've had a little bit of a dry spell. But interestingly enough, the tennis enthusiasts took a magic liking to Nadal and Federer, especially when you looked at the numbers of TV watchers and attendance. They looked for that matchup. And you think about back in the era when Borg played Connors or Borg played McEnroe, the numbers of people watching Wimbledon final, U.S. Open finals were astronomical. They were huge numbers. It didn't have to be just an American, but in our case now, for Americans to really dig into the sport again and watch it with Federer and Nadal slowly fading and Serena and Venus going, I think we're going to have to get some American players back to the top. And I hear all the time, America's not doing anything. You know, why don't we have any players? America's programs are strong. But as you can see, only a few make it to the top. And, you know, as the Australians did, think about it. They ruled the game 50s, 60s. And then they had a 20-year drought until, who was it? Like Patrick Rafter and Pat Cash came through. And they got to world's number one and won some titles. And I think it will be the same in America. I think since Pete Sampras and Agassi and Courier, we've had a drought. We've got a lot of good players coming up in the pipe. Fritz almost got through into the semis, but Nadal had one more little run in him. But I think our programs are building, and we're going to see a period where America will be back at the top, and we'll have a nice run like ladies did with Serena Venus in the men's side. And then, of course, the transition, the game coming back to the forecourt like I see it, where you have more drop shots, more volleys. That transition is going to occur, which will make the game a little more exciting. So there's a lot of positive things going on in sport. There are a lot of juniors coming into the program, but I think pickleball's here to stay, and I think it's going to be a formidable platform for a new sport to take Olympic status and for the TV networks to find a way to monetize it and make it work for everybody.
Well, with Billy McGee's energy, I have no doubt, and you're assisting the growth of the sport. Of course, I didn't tell the audience that at one time you were the president of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then, of course, you're moving to arena football. You take all of that background, your energy, your striking great looks, and Billy McGee will make sure that pickleball continues to prosper, especially in the state of Florida, and especially when we partner up pretty soon, buddy, with our new streaming sports channel, and we have our own pickleball broadcast streaming around the world. That'll be an absolute blast.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I think that with our little pickleball company slogan, Let's Get Wild, I'm not sure you can get any more wild than you and I, and maybe Ben and a few others, getting all these great pickleball pros and celebrities like we had in Nashville. We had all of the NFL retired chapter up there that, like we did on 9/11 and will again in Tampa St. Pete, that had never played. And we had country music stars, and we had some NHL guys. Chris Mason came out, former Predator goalie, who played with the Predators when I was running the Lightning. And I told him, too bad you got shelled by us that night. And he goes, I don't even remember that night. I said, sure you don't.
You never remember the losses. You never remember getting your ass kicked. Are you kidding me?
Well, I tell all the juniors, listen, if I quit every time I got beat, I would have quit 70 million times.
Hey, well, you know what? I'm glad you brought up Ben. because I thought he was just a real conservative, quiet kid. And you've been down to my beach bungalow. I had some of the youngsters that are in my world down now, and we had music on the beach, and it was a great time. But Ben, he knows how to let his hair down. He can hang with you, Billy.
Well, we're going to have to do that. And let me jump back to the Lightning. You know, it was one of the most incredible moments of my life, being the president of the Lightning and being in Tampa Bay, and especially having previously had such great run with the Storm, the Tampa Bay Storm, which people love dearly, and Jay Gruden and all those guys. You saw where Jay went on to, and you know, when you look at the Lightning and see the run they've just had and will continue to have, my having been in that position of running it, my hat's off to their administration, to their ownership, Mr. Vinnick and the group. They've just done such a magnificent job. And, you know, we were a part of one of the toughest periods when the Lightning were bankrupt and, you know, they weren't that good. And I had said in an interview one day that, you know, when you have a team in a city and you support them, you got to support them when they're not good, and you got to support them when they're good, or you don't get to keep them. And the Lightning fans, even in the bad times, turned out at 12 to 15,000 people, which was phenomenal. And I'm so glad that they've gotten to hoist that cup three times. I think three, right?
Yeah, three.
Three and almost four, and I'm sure they'll hoist it again. And I was fortunate enough to get to hoist it myself at the NHL All-Star Game, so I did get to hold the Lord Stanley Cup. So
is that baby as heavy as it looks?
Good thing I did a little pumping of some iron, because that thing ain't light. But more importantly, for the founder, you know, the founders of the sport in Tampa, Phil Esposito, who is the father of the Lightning, and for him to have the opportunity to see his child grow up and get those cups, for Tony, God rest his soul, to be able to see it, I just think it's magnificent. I love the city of Tampa, and I'm hoping our pickleball event there, 9/11, that people rally around it. And, you know, again, we're supporting the Wounded Blue and a few others. And, you know, Mike, you and I will have the radio show going, so I'm really looking forward to that.
All right, my friend. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Maybe we'll run down to the beach as well after you get some of your work accomplished. But you'll be on often. We have plenty to talk about, my man.
You guys be safe. God bless. And everybody, just stay safe out there. We're living in a little crazy time. But as my mama used to tell me, this too shall pass.
All right, and we're going to pass. We got to roll on and talk a little high school sports. We'll talk to you tomorrow, buddy. I'll see you. Thanks, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Billy McGee, and when you meet him, like I said, he is a character. He played at LSU tennis. He played all over the world. And then he took that, his background, and became the president of the Lightning, the original president, and then the original of the Tampa Bay Storm. So that's pretty cool. All right, so let me take care of some business, and then we're going to talk to Brad Richardson and the longtime Seminole Warhawks.
Mm-hmm.
I got it right.
Jesus.
And may I stumble, fumble, and bumble on that. I think I said the Seminoles one time. How stupid would that be? Yep, and now here comes the Seminoles. Jeez. All right, let's thank A-Side Printing and Rick Herbert. He's the official printer of Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and On the Tee, Florida. Radio St. Pete and Sunshine 96.7 FM. He's just been superb to us. Give Rick a call today at 727-542-3897. And I'll tell you what, he is just a humble guy. I think I've told you about it. He's done business with Kiss, Madonna, the Bolts, the PGA, World Series. I don't even think he's a sports fan. He's just a great guy. You can go to his website, acehighprinting.com. They've been serving Tampa Bay for 18 years. Give them a call today. That's Rick Herbert, 727-542-3897. And now, without further delay, as we prepare to, in August, late next month, we're launching the Prep Connection. We'll be covering high school sports in all three counties. We're going to pour a lot of energy, our own platform, specifically for that on our own sports channel. We're going to have 1 hour each Saturday where we have the kids down, like we did last week. We had the Gibbs kids and from the tri-state area. We haven't had any Seminole Warhawks yet, though, and that's on your back, brother.
I know no Warhawks yet, but if I know anybody that could bring them out, it's Brad Richardson over here.
And that's why I'm going to buy him lunch today, because I'm going to be lunch and beverages, because I'm going to need your input, young man. And I'll let you take it from here, and the old man's going to take a quick break.
All right, sounds good. Well, Brad, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you coming out at short notice.
Hey, I can, you know, definitely make time for you, Benny.
Of course.
Definitely make time for you.
Just for me, though, right, Brad?
Oh, yes.
Right?
I mean, yeah. God, it's Ben Botham. What can we say? What can we say about Ben Botham?
Hey, I mean, you did, if anyone didn't know, Brad used to announce some of my games back when I used to play at Seminole High School.
Long, long time ago.
I know. Isn't that crazy? What's it now? 6 years since I was down there?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, yeah. Wow.
Kind of crazy how fast time flies, but
true. And I keep growing the gray hairs, and well, you'll eventually catch up.
I'm definitely catching up, Brad. I'm not the body's aging faster than the mind, I think, and I know the mind's definitely catching up a little bit too. But why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners, for those who don't know you, even though you are legendary, at least in this area.
Yeah, at least in Pinellas County.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up here in Pinellas County, Seminole, Florida, born and raised. Actually, it's funny, I was not an athlete in high school. I was a band nerd. I was with Seminole Warhawk Band. And, growing up here, I mean, baseball is ingrained in Pinellas County. You can play it year-round. And when you have a ton of travel ball teams around here, you have a lot of former college, minor league, major league players who move down to Florida and start up these teams. There's a lot of great opportunities. And the person that got involved with that, of course, was my brother, Nate Richardson. He had played baseball starting, God, when he was about 6 years old. 6 years old. I mean, I remember, I just remember traveling with him around Orlando, Auburndale area, just watching those games on long, long weekends. And like I said, grew up, it's really ingrained in the family in terms of my brother and all. Unfortunately, we lost my brother in 2009 in a terrible car accident in Seminole. He was only a freshman in high school. He made the team. He made the Seminole Warhawks team his freshman year. It's a rarity.
A big rarity. It's tough to make the team in Seminole.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Seminole's a dynasty, as we all know. I mean, you've had, you know, a lot of great major league players that had come out of Seminole, seven altogether. Some of those include Casey Kochman, Bobby Wilson, Joey Crable, of course. But I think the one that everyone knows now, who's got a connection with our family, a longtime great friend of our family, and he played ball with Nate, is, of course, Brett Phillips. And I've known Brett since he was 8 years old, watched him play. Very, very fast kid. Great hitter. Great. Y'all have seen the laugh. Happy-go-lucky personality. What you see is what you get, definitely.
Oh, yeah. And Brett now wears your brother's number, correct?
Yeah. Okay. So with that whole thing, if anyone doesn't know the whole story behind 35, going back to one part of this, when Brett was going to graduate, when he was graduating high school, when MySpace was still around, okay, everyone was starting to move to Facebook. So Brett decided to post something on my brother's MySpace page. Just basically a final, you know, thinking about your brother, always going to be thinking about you every time I go on the field. And the promise that he made to Nate was that one day when he would step on a major league field, he would wear the number 35 just for him. And this was, you know, this was a promise. You know, sometimes you just don't know if it's going to happen. Well, for Brett, the stars aligned. And when he was traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, obviously we all remember Game 4 and everything that happened with that, the excitement here in Pinellas County when that happened with Brett. And before the season started, he was talking to Rays management, and of course they heard the story and they were absolutely thrilled. It was a fantastic thing. And it was just around, like late December, early part of January, where I got a call from him. And the weirdest thing on the phone is that he says, "Brad, what's your mom's jersey size number?" And I'm like, "I don't know, Brad. I don't."
It's an odd question.
Yeah, it was. You know, what is her jersey size? And I'm like, "Brad, I have no idea, to be honest. I mean, my mom has never worn a baseball jersey, and you know, and all."
She's gonna lace up the cleats and hit the drop.
Exactly.
Huh?
I mean, yeah. I mean, my mom's tough. I mean, she can definitely get out there and play for sure. But anyway, He it was just kind of this odd question and all, and I could kind of sense like he was holding something back on the phone. I'm like, "Brett, what's really going on? Just tell me what's going on." And the only thing that he told me over the phone is he said, "Brad, I got it. I got 35. And I was like, I was in my car when he called me too, and I was just shocked. And of course, his first comment was, "You know, please keep it quiet. Please keep it quiet." And I said, "I'm not going to tell my mom," because what happened was a lot of us have seen that video that was planned out with him and a lot of the Rays media and all that to do this. And ironically, the week they did that, they were doing it actually the Tuesday after my brother's preseason tournament. So that Monday, we had the ceremony, the first opening game for that. And then Tuesday, they film it at our house, total surprise for my mom. And then Wednesday was the final game. And then Wednesday night, I think close to around 10, 11 o'clock is when it went out. And everyone was just, they were absolutely ecstatic. I mean, I've only watched that video three times, and I can't watch it anymore just because I'm one of those people that I'm very particular if something is that perfect, that good. That video is, I'll say right now, is damn near perfect. So, yeah. And it really does. I mean, it really is something that is very emotionally charged for us, and we will obviously forever be thankful for what Brett did for us and for Nate, obviously.
Yeah, Brett's just, it seems like just a stand-up guy, just an amazing human being, and he's done a lot for your family and for everyone around here, and it's
so that I hear that you guys are getting them on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. I think we should make that note about that.
Maybe off season.
Yeah.
When I was texting him, when I was talking to him a little bit, he was like, "Man, I'm surprised you're on the radio with that monotone voice of yours," and that made me think about Brad over here. He has quite the announcing voice. It's kind of legendary here in Seminole. Where
he's got good pipes. You got great pipes.
People accuse him of.
Hey, you're fired.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Brad.
I'll head on out. But people accuse him of having a voice modulator. So Brad, why
a voice modulator?
That was for years.
Well, in reality, what I do is when I announce like this, you know, it's a little different right now. So, but when I sit there, I just do this constantly before a game goes. No one sees me around doing this, blah, blah, blah. Hope you can hear it pretty well. But, that's what it is.
And then when I come back to this, everyone's just kind of like, wait a second, what's going on here exactly?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I've never heard anybody do that.
Yeah, why don't you help me relive my high school days? Give me what you would do to announce me coming onto the mound, huh?
Well, the first thing I would say in my mind is, oh, here we go.
Oh, God. I hope we got enough runs.
Yeah. Well, we will. If you got to ask him another story sometime about his senior night, but I won't embarrass him on the show right now. But another story for another time. Let's see here.
Your attention, ladies and gentlemen. I'm now on the mound for the Seminole Warhawks. I forget your number. What's your number?
21.
Now pitching number 21, Ben Bartholom.
It was good. I love it.
How old are you?
You want me to say that in the air? I'm 34. I'm going to be 34. I'm 33.
You look like you're his age.
Yeah, well, the beard definitely does that for you, Benny.
The beard adds a little bit on, but, you know, me and Brad, you'll catch us at the local Applebee's having a good time there, so, you know.
then people probably say, is that your brother?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there. Let's take that as a compliment.
There
man.
We go. Yeah.
You perfected it. That's superb. We might have to talk about you doing some voiceover stuff for my shows and make a few bucks on the side.
I'd be honored to do that.
Oh, my God, that would be...
He throws it on like it's nothing. It's great. But he's a wealth of knowledge, though, on high school sports here in the area. And I saw you brought a little sheet here of some of the players and stuff.
Hanging out
over there.
Yeah, especially for the season and all that. I just want to make sure I have everything and just not just, you know, trying to shoot from the hip at all the stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for over 10 years.
Wait a minute. I've been shooting from the hip for almost 20 years on the air, and now someone's going to come in and professionalize us. I appreciate that. Yeah, give us. Let's talk a little high school sports, because we're going to be doing an entire hour every Saturday. We'll have you on quite often.
Oh, I appreciate that. That'd be awesome.
All sports you're doing for Seminole? Doing football?
Well, I announced for football and all that. I've been announcing for a long time for various stuff. I actually announced for other schools too around the county because everyone.
My man, we met the right guy.
Yeah, I announced for a Calvary Christian at one point. It was only just for like maybe 2 weeks. Let's just put it that way. Greg Olson, who was over there, gave me the opportunity, but it's always been Seminole. Seminole football. I announced for that. Chris Miller, who was the former head coach there, allowed me to do it. And imagine having that sound system on a Friday night. Seminole baseball, obviously. But I announced for, at one point, Shorecrest Prep, Admiral Farragut right here. I have their hat. I always wear that one just for the Navy for my dad. But and then Clearwater High School, Pinellas Park at one point. Yeah, I've announced a lot of sports. I've announced a lot of teams. So.
Well, you and I are going to sit down, and hopefully I can make an offer that you can't refuse to get involved in our world, because I've been looking. I did this up north for almost two decades, and we were the leader in the entire state of Iowa for high school coverage.
Oh, wow.
So as I look down here, it's underserved. You'll agree with that.
Yeah.
You both will, from a media perspective. So we want to give these kids recognition, and and I really want to focus on the public schools because Calvary Christians, the Jesuits, I've got Jesuit hat here. I've had all the Jesuit championship teams down this year. But the public schools don't get the love that they need and deserve, and maybe we can collaborate on some of that.
Yeah, with the private schools, you're always going to get the draw for them just because of different coaches that they can bring in and everything like that. So, coaches are able to, and that really comes from travel ball, too. Travel ball, especially with Florida, you have a lot of former college, minor league, major league players who all of a sudden now they're raising their families here and they're like, you know what, I want to start up a travel ball team. So players that they bring in from there, okay, and if they have certain connections with certain private schools and some public, obviously, they're going to say, hey, come on over here, come play for this team, come play for this coach. And that's what they're able to do. And travel ball, you know, with everything that travel is able to do, it's you get a lot of great players groomed to play in high school ball and hopefully to that next level.
However, Brad, here's the issue, and I know that. With my own sons, did the same thing. I sound like a hypocrite, private school.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd get some kids playing travel ball with us, and then next thing you know, they're going to our Catholic school. I don't know who was the guy that got them there, but I had a lot of fingers pointed at me over the years. But, again, the kids in the public schools, like we had Gibbs on last week, and the Boca Ciegas, and these kids that don't have the coaches don't have the feeder systems,
mm-hmm.
I want to make sure we give them a lot of recognition as well, because they've got some great athletes on those teams.
Yeah, and what I'll say about a lot of the kids that are in the public school system, I mean, these kids, I think they play the game a little more rougher. I mean, they're out there to prove something. I mean, you see a lot more...
Chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely a chip on the shoulder. But when they get out there, I mean, they absolutely come ready to go. They don't look at that other player on the other team and say, okay, that is my goal. No, their goal is from inning number one to inning seven. They are going to go and do everything they can. Every single play, that's their focus. And they, like I said, they don't care who that other school is. They don't care who that other player is. They will play dirty ball. They will do whatever they need to do to get that run, to get that win.
You know what? And I agree with you. We have developed a relationship with Hollins. And Hollins had a great, great year.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids, and they came down here like four or five times because it became almost like their lucky charm.
Yeah.
They come down and then they won and they kept advancing.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, and then they ran up against the eventual state champ, Jesuit, and got beat 16-0. But I saw what you just described in those kids' eyes, and in Coach Rogers, who had been at Boca Ciega, and you know, he's a
legend.
He's a legend here, and that's why I love the story and the support that they've got, and that's what we need to, you know, as we support high school sports, get everybody behind, you know, stories like that. So you're dead right.
Yeah. So do you notice any standout talent maybe from the All-Star game that you notice that going on to the future that, you know, whether it's high school or another year in high school or college that...
Well, I mean, actually, just to touch real quick on Hollins, I think this season one of the big standouts that they had on the team was Rylan Bosenhardt. I mean, kid came out there. I mean, he's one heck of a competitor. I mean, he gets up there. I mean, when he's behind the plate, I mean, he's a monster. The kid is just incredible. Great hitter, actually. I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think he got that... walk-off hit in districts against Seminole to win the game in advance.
He did, and he's a great kid.
Yeah, great kid in overall. So, yeah, Ryland is one of those that on Hollins that really, really stands out to me, and just one heck of a competitor. I mean, and also, too, another team to touch on this year was Dunedin. Dunedin was able to pull through, and they were able to go to states as well. I mean, with two seniors on their team, I mean, you had Trey Beard and Rock Helton, two great pitchers. I mean, those guys, I believe it was Rock Helton. Yeah, Rock Helton during the Seminole game. They played at home at the Toronto Blue Jays field. Dunedin Blue Jays field, sorry. And they played down there. And kid went six great innings, was able to hold off. Seminole was a close game. It was a close game. Final game, I think final score was like 2-1. Or 2-1. And, very, very tough guys. They just graduated. So, again, with those guys on the team, both being seniors, they, you know, they're an example of why they were able to go to states as well. I mean, the public school and everything like that. A couple other ones. On Seminole, there was a kid on there, freshman this year, is named Mikey Cassino. And Mikey, 6'2".
You got to love that name.
Great. Cassino, yeah.
Hey, he comes on the plate. Give us a Mikey Cassino.
Oh, Mikey.
All right. Your attention, ladies and gentlemen.
Now on the mound for the Seminole Warhawks, Mikey Cassino.
Cha-ching.
That's money
exactly.
Right there. That's
that
money
is
right.
Money. That was money. We're going to have some fun. All right.
But anyway,
my friend.
But anyway, with old Mikey, I mean, the kid's a freshman. Believe it or not, Mikey, in his freshman year, he committed to Tennessee. He's already committed to Tennessee. Now, he hasn't signed the papers yet. I mean, but yeah, he's already committed. I mean, he's that known around Perfect Game and PBR. They know who he is. So he's a great player, great pitcher.
Those losers got beat by my Fighting Irish.
I love that.
But yeah, he's up and coming. I mean, with Seminole, I'll say this right now, too. You got three that are going to be seniors this year. You have Luke Carey, got a great bat on him. Plays good at second. He's a good second baseman. Tyler Saunders would be a very big importance to Seminole, both at first base and definitely on the mound. He's definitely up and coming that. And behind home plate is Christian New. Christian New, I tell you, he can block the plate. He's a big kid, and he just knows how to block the plate really well. He's got a great arm. I mean, watching him try to pick off someone at second, fantastic. And I'm going to tell you, the bat with Christian, he's one of those that when you need him in a situation to just get a great hit, he can do it. I mean, I remember during, I believe it was the Clearwater game this past season, kid hit a triple. It was a triple, and it really changed the outcome of the game. It was also a very close game, and that really, really helped Seminole pull through and was able to bring the win. So,
you're listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, and I'm actually going to tag this as our first Prep Connection segment that we're going to expand, and we're talking to Brad Richardson, longtime high school sports announcer, several schools, and just a plethora of the kind of information that we want to deliver on a weekly basis and on our platform as we get the high schools, the journalism school classes behind us, getting us information, and you're going to be my man, so continue, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, even too, you know, with a lot of kids coming up in the area, I mean, you look at Eastlake. It's another school, for example. I mean, Eastlake this past year, I actually, unfortunately, was not able to go to their game there. Seminole only played them once this year, and it was up at Eastlake. But with the seniors just this year that just came out of them, I mean, you had Dominic Mayer, who came out. A lot of the players, actually, I saw this year were ones I got to see at the Hillsborough versus Pinellas All-Star game. And that being said, with that game, and Mr. Benny has brought me on to talk about that, I got to announce that game at the Trop.
Yeah, I was helping you a little bit on the ones and twos over there, yeah. Keeping you cool.
Was he a good assist?
Yeah. I mean, I was just kind of trying
to
keep
it together.
Man, I was
going to go over there. I would have loved to hear you guys.
Yeah, I mean, announcing inside the
Trop. How cool was that for you?
It was incredible. I mean, it came actually at the last minute. I had gotten a text from Adam Morovic, who's the head coach at Seminole. He texts me, he says, hi, Brad, how you doing? I'm like, good. And he says, can you talk on the phone for a few minutes? And I was like, okay, this could be good or bad, whatever. So anyway, I get on the phone with him, and he's like, listen, we're trying to plan out the Pinellas versus Hillsborough All-Star game. As you know, it's going to be down at the Trop, and we're trying to get everything together. And Al Bennett, who's the athletic director for Pinellas County, said that we need a public address announcer because the Rays' main guy, Greg Khalil, who actually I know Greg, I've known him for a long time, he actually lives in Seminole, they were not going to be there that day. So he says, we need a PA announcer. What do you think? And I'm just quiet for a second. I'm like, Adam, do you really honestly think I'm going to turn that down? I mean, seriously? I mean,
what a thrill for you, man. And what a resume builder, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the future. I can see, you know, with that on your resume, many other opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And just announcing in the Trop was just incredible. I mean, that whole inside of there, I mean, sound bounces all over the place. But when you're able to time it right and when you hear it, just to hear those kids' names, it's just incredible. It's loud. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded amazing. I was happy to hear Brad up down there. I was sitting with his mom for a little while, cheering him on. Very, very happy to see him down there.
See, he was cheering me on, not the players. I think it should be the other way around. But, hey, Benny, I appreciate
I'll
on that.
I'll wait till Saunders gets to the All-Star game.
I knew it.
Saunders, he's my pick for being a stud pitcher pretty soon. I mean, look how tall he is. He's like 6'3", yeah. Right?
6'4", actually.
6'4"? Oh, my.
But there was another kid on the team, Jackson Gray, and him would always try to see who was the tallest, and Tyler beat him, I believe.
If he keeps on doing what he's doing, that kid's really going to be able to shove and really have some velo behind his ball.
You know, fellas, coming from the Midwest, it just astounds me of the talent that you see on a nightly basis, yeah. When you're calling a game, mm-hmm. In baseball down here. It's just, it's unbelievable, and it's kind of like the speed I've seen on the football field. Relative to the rest of the country. And You guys just kind of take it nonchalantly. You're talking about guys that are going to be going into the pros. You got guys that are going D1, D2. On every team, there's one or two. They're going to be collegiate athletes. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You're going to have that one player every year that definitely stands out that's going to be a D1 athlete or even going to the pros. I mean, one I'd like to bring up right now because I got to announce him, and it's one of the standout moments, was Bo Bichette. He went to Lakewood. And I remember announcing that kid, and just everyone would just be watching him. And I'm like, you know, originally, I forgot at one point that he was Dante's son. But I remember him getting up to the plate, and everyone was just like quiet. I'm like, what's going on? They said, that's Bo Bichette. I'm like, who's Bo Bichette? They're like, you don't know who Dante is? Seriously? I'm like, no. But watching him, fantastic shortstop, and oh man, he can crush the ball.
Didn't you tell me he's amazed with his quickness and speed?
Oh, it was like he was on ice skates sliding across the field. Like, he glided. It was unbelievable how fast he could get across. And his bat, too. He hit some of the most monstrous pop-ups I've ever seen.
I thought we'd see his name in some of the All-Star voting and possibility of making the team, but no.
No, Vlad beat him on that one, but... He was actually, I think he was actually in one of the All-Star games. I think it was last year he was in the All-Star game,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, he was, yeah. And I they're still my pick to win the World Series this year. I really think that team's a good team. You know, maybe we're a little bit biased because we got to see him play.
But. Yeah, and you're also sitting outside Ferg's, too, so I'd be careful saying that. But, hey, I'll let it slide.
Hey, I still root for my Rays. I'm just saying. I have to have a take every once in a while.
So, Brad, quickly, your bio. Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Seminole, yeah. My mom, she's from this area. She went to Clearwater long before, you know, Clearwater became what it is, and it's all built up now. But, yeah, born and raised here. I was telling Benny, I was not in sports growing up. I did play T-ball and soccer, but my real thing was music. And I think that's where I got the voice, obviously. I was in marching band in high school, long story short. When he was involved in a car accident, I was telling him earlier, we lost him in a car accident. He was a freshman on Seminole's baseball team, and whole area knows about it. And what the Seminole baseball team has done for my brother, they have a preseason classic in his honor. They have an award that's given out, and every year my family gives back as well. We give some very nice bats to the seniors. We have a scholarship in his name. So. Yeah, I mean, I've grown up here, and I've seen amazing things happen out of this area. And with Seminole and many other schools in the area, what I've always loved with Pinellas County is just the sense and connection of family. That's really the best part about it.
Well, you're going to fit in real well here because that's what this has all been about for, you know, two decades up north, positive participation in a healthy endeavor from the peewees, the preps, the pros. And I love your attitude, I'm looking forward to furthering this, gentleman, as we wind things down. I want you two to belly up to the bar, get yourself a bite and a beverage, and keep an eye on his consumption. He likes to start fast out of the blocks. He told me that by 10 times at my place on the 4th of July. I get out of the blocks fast. I'm like, you're going to fall out of the blocks if you keep it up. But he's Ben Botham. He's just a great asset, and I appreciate him bringing you down here, Brad, coming down and I see a bright future for all of us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely love to be back on the show. Definitely, I'll talk more about it.
It might be weekly.
Oh, weekly.
We'll talk, yeah, and if you can't get down, we'll just call you. How about that?
Hey, that works for
me,
too.
We might build a prep connection, I'm serious, around Brad Richardson. So we'll talk about that when I get done here. All right, for Buster DeLay, Jeff Mangold, Dave McCarthy, Billy McGee, Brad Richardson, Ben Botham, Joe Bedrow, and Big Ed on the controls, I'm Mike Rickard, thanking you for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. God bless you. God bless America.
WTAN Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.